I'm delighted now to welcome to the Radio Cafe James Campbell Caruso. He is chef and owner of La Boca and Taberna restaurants here in Santa Fe. His cookbook is called España, Exploring the Flavors of Spain. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So I have to say I am a great fan of your cooking and of your restaurants and have had some of the happiest eating moments of my life at La Boca. It's a wonderful place.
I've seen you dining a few times.
How did you begin your life in food and in cooking?
Oh, well, life in food, that's hard to, I was too young to remember, but I grew up in a family on the East Coast, Boston area, where lots of people love to cook, love to eat food. There are lots of Italians and lots of European influence. You know, some of that cosmopolitan city influence where we got to eat a lot of different kinds of foods. And it just always seemed like a great thing for me. We didn't have a lot going on in the family, didn't have a lot of means to travel and things. To me, it was always like a travel experience to go into the city and go to different ethnic neighborhoods and different ethnic foods were around. And I got exposure that way, and it felt like I was going somewhere.
Yeah, right. You go to different parts of the world by eating their
foods. Yeah, it was exciting. Foods.
Now, did you grow up eating and then learning to cook Italian food?
Yeah, mostly. I just learned to cook whatever I felt like cooking. But yeah, there was a lot of Italian food around. My grandma, my mom, lots of people in the family were cooking all the time. Yeah.
So how did you then get into Spanish food?
Well, really, I think it was after a while I moved from that area to New Mexico in 1989. And I started really getting interested in the Latino food and the Mexican food and all this great, this other cuisine that I didn't really know that much about. And the more I kind of researched and studied that, the more it kept leading me back to Spain. And the influence that I really liked was coming from there. And I really didn't know all that much about Spanish food, so I just started reading about it, really, until I could get over there. Finally, I got to go spend some time there, and it really kind of triggered something in me.
You write very eloquently in your cookbook about what cooking is for people of Spain. It's not just cooking. I mean, you call it sacred.
Yeah, it's really just like breathing. You know, there's not a lot of separation of life and food. You know, it's all kind of one thing, and there's a lot of great respect for the ingredients, and I even see it like affection and love for these ingredients, almost like you'd have for a person, is the only way I can describe it from our culture.
What does that look like? Give me some examples.
You know, just the way, just somebody looking longingly at a fish in the fish market and all the ideas going through his head about how I'm going to prepare that and make my family happy. And there's just a lot of good feelings surrounding that great ingredient that can inspire.
What are some of the different cultural and culinary influences in Spanish cooking? Because, I mean, it's certainly not monolithic.
No, definitely not. It's hard to say what a Spaniard is. It's such a mix. There's certainly the Moorish influence. They weren't the first to inhabit that place. Phoenicians were there. The Romans were there. The Celts. The Basque were always there. The Catalonians, you know, they're cultural groups that have always been there. And when you look closely at the Spanish flag, it has, you know, the big portions of red and yellow and these big, bold colors. But in the center, there's kind of a crest that is all these different tribes kind of put together in one flag. It's really fascinating when you look at that and see the history of it.
And each one of them has its own culinary influences?
Yeah, they do. It's very regional, and it's a big country as far as Europe's concerned. It's really very regional where you go to some parts and you enjoy some dishes, and then you go 50 miles up the road and you'll never see those dishes again. And they have this whole other repertoire, and I love that.
So you went to Spain, but I mean, how did you go about studying? Did you go to culinary school?
No, I didn't. I just feel like just life experience and trying to cook things on my own. I did a lot of trial and error just at my home. I did have some cooking jobs where I was allowed to just kind of play around and make specials and things like that and just start to explore that that influence that I was really, really digging, especially when I got to here and I became a sous chef at La Casa Sena, and which gave me a lot of freedom because it was, at that time, it was a little more kind of Latino fusion, and which we were getting into a lot of Southwestern things and a lot of kind of Mark Miller influence kind of things and bringing in Mexican flavors. And I tried to, at that point, do kind of the same thing with some Spanish and European things to bring into the Southwestern mix. And that started to play well, I think, some of those combinations of flavors. And it just got more and more interested in where some of these flavors and ingredients were going to go.
What are some examples of that, mm-hmm. that kind of fusion? I mean, mm-hmm. all cooking, all art is a fusion.
Right.
There's influences from everywhere. You can never trace the beginning. There's no such thing as purity. But, like, what were you doing at La Casa Sena? What kind of ingredients were you putting together?
I'll start by saying I don't really like fusion or the term, but that's what was happening and that's what we were doing. Kind of trying to combine different cuisines to almost come up with something new. But I think chefs do that all the time. I feel like it's my job as a chef to try to get you to try something new almost every time you come into my restaurant or I'm cooking. So I feel like that's the driving force for most chefs. It's like, okay, we've done this. We've done a lot of the classics. Hopefully we've done the classics really well. Let's go a little further. And like a fusion dish for me in that situation would be to do a classic thing like beef Wellington, which is more of a French-style filet mignon wrapped in puff pastry, mushroom, duxelle kind of filling. And we did that kind of in an empanada, and it made it more Mexican-style. You know, it sounds silly now. At that point, I thought it was great.
That sounds... But, and then you've got to make up cute names for it.
You got to make up cute names like... Senor Wellington,
exactly.
Or a croc senor when you make a little sandwich.
Right, yeah. Croc senor. Now, talk about tapas. I mean, you think about Spanish food, you think about these tapas, small portions. Mm-hmm. Is that the way people eat all over Spain?
Well, that's how they socialize, and it's kind of more like a social institution. More than the food, it's a way to congregate and get out of the house and see your peers and coworkers and family. I notice, you know, when I'm kind of bar hopping and going to these tapas bars, I see families out, old people, young people, it's late at night. So everybody's kind of out of the house. And some of the families that I got to know, they say they don't do a lot of entertaining at home. It's more like, let's go have some tapas. If you're in the city, in the vicinity, it's just so much easier to go do that, and you see other people and your cousins, and just kind of see what touch base with your peeps and your community, and I like that.
Yeah,
because that was like first and foremost. The food was almost secondary.
Well, it's also, I mean, in terms of the food, there's the socializing aspect to it, but it's also a way to have a lot of different flavors in one sitting.
Right, yeah. You asked about if tapas are the way people eat. Yeah, at certain times of the day, they are. But you usually have a big meal at home with your family early in the day, like 1, 2 o'clock, and then maybe have a little siesta time. And then later, 7, 8, 9 o'clock, you might go out for some snacks because you're hungry at that point. That might even just be before you eat dinner at 10 or 11 o'clock.
Yeah, that's a schedule we have not taken into our culture here in Santa Fe.
Yeah.
It's hard to get a bite to eat after 9:30.
I think we should start a siesta. Maybe right now as a public service announcement we could just say,
everybody
let's start
take
doing
a nap
siesta
after lunch today.
Yeah, it would be great.
Yeah.
I love that schedule.
That's what they do in Italy.
It's beautiful.
At least when I was there last, which was a long time ago, the shops were closed. A lot of them were closed from noon to 3.
Yeah. I like that. To me, when I'm in Spain, it's like every day is 2 days. Because you get up and have a coffee, espresso, maybe it has a little Spanish brandy in it or something like that, at 4 o'clock, and you do it all over again.
We're talking to James Campbell Caruso, chef and author of the cookbook España, Exploring the Flavors of Spain. Now, a lot of cooking, as you talked about, is trial and error, and you've presumably had a lot of mentors and then also really just tried a lot yourself.
Yeah, I've got to work with some great chefs along the way and kind of watch what they do. I think I've had success in kitchens because the chef would recognize that I was interested and I was really paying attention, so they would spend more time with me. And so that's kind of how I moved up through the ranks in kitchens. I always wanted to be a chef who was older, in his 40s or 50s, which is where I'm getting to be now, because they would seem to make it so simple, and you'd watch them and go, that doesn't sound that impressive. And then you taste it, and you really get what they're doing. And I see that in the cycle of being a chef, where you're young, you don't really know anything, you're trying hard, and you're trying just to duplicate. And then you try to really experiment, and you throw all the ingredients in your arsenal into one dish, and you try to do it like that. That ultimately doesn't work. You could come up with something interesting, but ultimately you want to get to that point where you're really just kind of each flavor is firing a cylinder of this engine, and it's an important component. And when you really cook like that, it boils it down to three or four main flavors that are in this bite that are just going to really come together, and you hear the universe click, and then you got it.
And the art is figuring out which of those three or four ingredients to combine into one dish and how to do it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's been done. When you look at some of the real classic dishes of Spain, Italy, France, some of the great cuisines of the world, even Mexico, New Mexico, some of those, it's already been done. You don't really have to reinvent it. You just have to kind of be aware of what's happening when you're cooking.
Awareness and attention. It's interesting because we were talking earlier to a Buddhist nun and thinking about qualities of attention and really paying attention, being aware of what's around you.
Yeah.
And also I think of Buddhism as associated with this idea of impermanence, and the most beautiful impermanent art form to me is food.
Right.
You make the most beautiful, fantastic masterpiece ever, and it gets eaten and it's gone.
We think about that sometimes in the kitchen. We'll stop and maybe take a photo of it and think, okay, what's going to happen to this? Maybe the photo is going to be out there somewhere in a cookbook or something like that. But really what happens is it gets ingested into a person's body. And that's an interesting art form.
Well, and as you write, and as, what was that movie? It was Like Water for Chocolate, I think, where this idea that whatever emotion is in the cook at the moment gets into the food.
Yeah, I believe that a lot. Sometimes I'm interviewed and I hardly ever talk about food, because to me it's important to have the right atmosphere in your restaurant and the right energy in your kitchen and your cooks and the chef, and to genuinely want to make people happy. You have to have that before. Then you can cook anything. The food doesn't matter. You have to have that feeling and that intention. And, you know, there are times when we do it so well, and you can see the customers almost floating on air as they walk out. And, you know, we don't hit that all the time, but that's the goal.
Yeah.
And, you know, the struggle is to try to get there, try to go from, on a scale of 1 to 10, take it to a 10, which means we're firing on all cylinders. We're really, everybody in that kitchen and the wait staff is kind of in the zone of genuinely trying to create a feeling. And then, like I said, then hopefully the food is good enough to back all that up. But you got to have the desire first to get there.
Yeah, I have to say, there are times where I have eaten the food at La Boca, and I have thought to myself, there's no such thing as spiritual happiness. It's all physical. It's all sensual.
Yeah, it could be both.
Yeah, I know. I'm kidding, but it's there's something about the happiness, food-induced happiness.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you about running a restaurant, because one of the things that I appreciate in restaurants, having lived in the same town for a long time, you go back to places maybe a few times a year, and you notice whether the same waiters and waitresses are there.
Mm-hmm.
And at your place, people stay for a really long time. Yeah. At other places, there's continual turnover. Mm-hmm. And I always think if there's continual turnover, something's not right.
Yeah, it's been a big part of our success. Our staff is great, and they really get it. They get it whether I'm in the house or not. They're really conscientious about the whole package that we're offering. So their mind is on it, and we hopefully treat everybody well and have a good time while we're working. We don't want people to be stressed or while they're working. Going back to your comment about the feeling is going to come through in the food and the service, and we believe that. You know, if somebody's really having a hard time, we'll take care of it and try to make them happy. Or maybe they can't work there if they're doing that all the time.
Right.
But we've been blessed with a great crew of people that have been working with us, some of them since we opened.
Now, your wife is the pastry chef.
Yeah, Leslie. She's been a pastry chef for a long time and is extremely knowledgeable and inspirational for me. When we met, you know, all my kind of yearnings for more food education and wanting to be the person that gets people to taste new things and try new things, it was just magnified when I met Leslie, because she had the same thing. And she backs it up with a huge amount of knowledge about the science of baking and the passion of baking and things like that that she's done in her career. And she was a culinary instructor here in Santa Fe for a long time, about 11 years at the Santa Fe Community College, teaching pastry and baking. But she's always been involved as our pastry chef and pastry guru and dessert person.
And master of high altitude baking, presumably.
Yeah, she kind of doesn't make that a big issue. She claims that it's not that much different. She has a few little tricks that work, and it doesn't faze her.
We're talking to James Campbell Caruso, chef and author of the cookbook España, Exploring the Flavors of Spain. And there's a lot of focus in the cookbook on ingredients, and you explain what the different kinds of cheeses are and cured meats and olives. And mm-hmm. I wondered where you get your ingredients for your restaurant. Do you have to search far and wide? Are there good local ingredients?
There are some great local ingredients. When we're trying to find those real authentic ingredients from Spain, it has been a struggle in the past. It's gotten a lot better in the past 10 or 12 years since I've been cooking Spanish food. It's gotten 10 times better. We have some great wholesalers that deliver to Santa Fe now who bring in products from Europe. We also have a store that I probably couldn't live without called The Spanish Table here in town.
Right.
They bring in stuff that you won't find anywhere else, and we're lucky to have them here.
That place is amazing.
Yeah, they're great, and I'm there once a week probably, because they have things even some of my great wholesalers can't bring in. You know, smoked paprika, authentic chorizos, some of the olives and canned tunas and canned anchovies and things like that.
Now, do you ever cure your own foods, like make cured meats and things like that?
We do, and we're going to start a program of making our own cured chorizos. We just haven't gotten to it yet. It's kind of a bigger project. As we launch this new restaurant, we haven't really had time to get into that. That's on the back burner. But we do some curing. One of my favorite things to do is to make mojama, which is a cured tuna loin that you find in southern regions of Spain, Cadiz especially. And they pack it in salt, and you see it kind of hanging in the salt air, curing till it's really dry, and you kind of shave it like very thin. It's kind of like a dry ham, like a prosciutto or a jamón serrano. It's almost so dry at times that you shave it, and then you kind of drizzle lots of olive oil on it to kind of rehydrate it. And we've been able to recreate that in a curing process. We're not a coastal, obviously, but we've been able to recreate that with some sea salts and things like that. So we cure the tuna till it's kind of cooked through with the salts and sugars and spices, and then we slice it thin.
Does it taste like tuna?
It tastes like tuna ham.
Very interesting.
It's really, really delicious. You can just eat it just like that, or you can you could cook it a little bit, it'll get a little crispy. And it's really a great ingredient. Sometimes we shave it with a peeler on top of a salad. But I like it just sliced with some olive oil and some roasted red peppers, kind of the classic way.
Now, on your days off, do you cook for yourself?
Yeah, I like to cook for my family and my friends. And, you know, we just kind of remodeled our kitchen at home so we could do a little more cooking. We have friends who love food, and we've been trying to get together with them a little more often. Started a little soup and sandwich party get together with them, and we cook a lot, almost every day.
I asked because I had a friend who was a chef who loved to cook, but when he got home, he just ate hot dogs and cheese and crackers because he was so tired of being in the kitchen.
Yeah, I see a lot of that, but I don't know. I always cooked, even when I, you know, was young and had kind of the bachelor pad. I always had a thing of eggplant parmesan or sauce going on the stove.
Right.
I always cooked. I just thought that was the greatest thing, to be able to just cook my own food.
Now, is food for you also a way of staying healthy and thinking about health?
Yeah, you definitely. I want to take into my body things that aren't going to be harmful, for sure. So I'm really conscientious of that when I buy food and think about where it's sourced. And so, absolutely, you know, I've had a couple of health issues with my eyes and other things where it really makes me think about that. And I've seen better results the more I'm conscious of what I'm eating. We all go through that. You can tell the difference. If you know the difference and then you go from one side to the other, you can really tell.
Do the foods that you serve, the dishes that you serve at your two restaurants, do they change with the seasons? Do they change with you just get tired of one thing and need to do another thing?
Yeah, all of that. It's seasonal. Sometimes we just get sick of dishes. There are some dishes we can't take off because there's too much public outcry.
What are some of those?
Let's see.
Let me guess, the artichokes.
We do some grilled artichokes that people love. We do kind of a Spanish cannellone, which is fresh pasta with scallops and crab, and cook it in clay in a manchego cream sauce. That's been a real popular dish. We do a steak that's a little more modern style with a smoked sea salt caramel, which sounds a little strange, but it works really well. Things like that. So there are five or six favorites that stay on the menu. Otherwise, yeah, it's seasonal. When the local produce hits, you know, June, July, August, September, all of it's on the menu. 90% of our produce during that time is locally grown. That stuff just tastes better than anything, and that's the first reason we get it. And there's lots of other great reasons to buy that and support the growers and bring in the local food. But the number one thing is nothing tastes that fresh and lively. The things we pull out of the ground here in New Mexico are so diverse and bursting with flavor. But it's such a short season. It just comes and goes.
Right.
So the menu's different this time of year.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's good.
Do you have more, what would you say, winter types of vegetables?
Yeah, more winter vegetables. Some, you know, I'm still getting potatoes and carrots and some winter squashes locally. And they're all in the menu. Just finished with some beets. So then we get more into meats, and we're procuring a lot of local meats and pork and beef and things like that. So that's always on the menu. We have some great cheeses when you're asking about local ingredients. There's some really good local goat cheeses that always end up on our menu.
Yeah. So you've created this cookbook, and presumably this is all stuff that we can try and succeed at if we follow the instructions carefully. Are there any things that you think, can't put that in the cookbook because nobody should try this at home?
Not really. Our cookbook is kind of a blend of modern and traditional cooking, just the way we cook at La Boca. And a lot of these dishes have made their way onto the Taverna menu, which is a little more traditional style. All of it's pretty simple. I don't get too elaborate when I cook. I don't have the patience. Sometimes I'll pick up a classical French book and try one of those dishes, and they're fun to recreate, but it's, man, I feel like I'm trapped by the book, and I don't really feel like I'm enjoying the process as much. I like to do it kind of fast and fresh, and that's kind of more of my cooking style. So it translates well into a cookbook for home cooks because it's pretty simple.
James Campbell Caruso is a chef. He's owner of La Boca and Taberna restaurants here in Santa Fe, which are both downtown. They're kind of back-to-back to each other. The one, you have to go in the courtyard. How do you get to Taberna?
Well, you know, La Boca has a great location on Marcy Street, kind of right across the street from Design Warehouse. And
right.
Il Piatto's in the neighborhood, they're right across the street. So it's a great visible location. And the other place is really tucked away. So you kind of go down some of these brick alleys as if you're going toward the Bullring restaurant. There's a courtyard back there. You can access it from Lincoln or Washington or from Marcy Street.
And
there's ways to get in. And
if you look around, you'll see La Taberna.
You'll see our signage and our patio. And there'll be a bustling patio scene going on there as soon as the weather warms up.
Right. Yeah. And there's live music in both restaurants, and there's happy hours at different times at the two restaurants.
Yeah, we do our we've been doing a 3 to 5 happy hour since we opened La Boca, where we do some half price tapas in the afternoon, so we don't close in between lunch and dinner. You can always come get something. And then when we open Taverna for night service, 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock, we have a lot of half price tapas and some special drinks. Kind of more of a traditional after work happy hour. And then we do some more happy hour kind of late at night, 10 to 11 at night at the Taberna. So you can always get something late, which is one of the things we really wanted to do in Santa Fe. I feel like we don't have enough places that are open after 9, 10 o'clock.
No kidding. It's I think the only thing I loathe about this city is that places aren't open late. Places to eat. You can go to Denny's, but.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, I want to go eat something later, you know, if I'm out and looking for something to do after work. A lot of us don't have a real traditional schedule in Santa Fe.
Or you go to the movies.
Or we're trying to go out to a show or something, and you can go get something. But also, on a larger scale, I think Santa Fe is kind of evolving and changing, and hopefully we're going to offer more as we try to attract more people from other cities and other countries and be this destination. I think the more we try to do that, the more we need to offer. And you're attracting people from some of the greatest cities in the world, and they come here, and I think
the sidewalks
at
roll up
10
at
9:30. They're disappointed.
Yeah.
And so I would like to see us do that in terms of economic development and tourism, and I just think it would be more fun for our local people too.
No doubt.
There's a lot of benefit to that, and I hope we're moving in that direction. We're going to try to do our part at Taverna and La Boca to just keep that night scene rolling as much as we can.
James Campbell Caruso is chef and owner at La Boca and La Taverna restaurants, author of the cookbook España, Exploring the Flavors of Spain. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Anytime. Thank you very much.